Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and this is CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com and Alan Watt, SentientSentinel.eu. It is June the 20th, 2007. I'm playing tonight a recording I made of a conversation I had this evening with Butch Chancellor, and it's an update on his wife. His wife, as you know, was taken into hospital. She had a kidney stone removed, and then they decided, because she was elderly, they'd like to put her to a hospice. Here's the update.
What we'll do is just again let you talk, and we'll start off by asking what's happened since the last time you were on the show.
Okay, we can do that.
Yeah, just you start off and okay. Tell me how it proceeded from when she was in the hospital. Go through the part where they tried to certify her incompetent and all that kind of stuff.
And I haven't told you, I don't think, that they handed it that, the hospital could have her declared incompetent and force her into a nursing home. They handed about to the, well, they said they could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then a doctor called me, Dr. Evans, and he told me that neuropsychiatrist examined Martha, and he and the entire staff agreed that Martha is what's the term? Demented.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Now let me give you a little bit more here before we get on air.
And which hospital was that again?
Pardon me.
Which hospital was that?
St. John's
hospital
in Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah.
And, he maintained that they all agreed. I mean, like these staff people, and he alleged that if this, they reached that conclusion because Martha had short-term memory loss.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, the story from Martha was quite different. They had really pressured her to convince her, there were a bunch of people came into her room. She said doctors, nurses, the psychiatrists, and some office people. Well, those would be the political commissars, the DFS CPS people.
Yeah.
And they were trying to pressure her into agreeing to go to a nursing home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their nursing home, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, you don't know Martha, but Martha gets it from her mother, I think. And if you want to do something counterproductive, you just try pressuring Martha.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess they were pressuring her because, and they'd try and classify her as being incompetent because she wouldn't go along with what they wanted.
Right.
So obviously anybody who won't go along with what they want must be incompetent.
Must be crazy.
Yeah.
You don't want to do what we order you to
mm-hmm.
do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And get this, Alan. Now, I'm not sure about this, where this all fits in. But when she came home, well, of course, she came in with a couple of buckets of nostrums of various sorts. And I was going through that, I found two tubes of toothpaste, one which is partially used,
mm-hmm.
and one which was not yet open,
mm-hmm.
Made in China.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a little item on my blog about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, on June 1, the FDA, as you may know,
mm-hmm.
told you, that told us to dump all
That's right.
toothpaste made in China because it's contaminated with antifreeze.
That's right.
And so I looked up the first stage of antifreeze poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
Sure sounds like dementia to me.
Well, I'm sure that's what it's meant to, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nothing happens by accident.
That's right, Alan.
They have panel upon panel and bureau upon bureau to investigate the stuff before the public get it on the market. They know exactly what's in everything, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they
well,
do.
Well, this is the thing, is they had, the FDA made their announcement June 1, and here it was June, I don't know what it was, the 19th mm-hmm. or something, that she came home.
Mm-hmm.
And they were merely brushing everybody's teeth over at the hospital, all the patients, with antifreeze.
What you might find, too, are the doctors and the nurses are demented themselves, because maybe they use it too.
Yeah. Hey, it's free, right?
That's right.
They can pocket one of those and
mm-hmm.
give it to their kids.
That's it. Yeah, it's a sort of, it's passed on like an infectious psychosis.
Yeah.
They're all becoming psychotic.
Yeah.
But what happened to lead up to them releasing Martha?
Pardon me?
What happened to them leading up to releasing her?
What happened, Alan, was that people like you scared the crap out of them.
Mm-hmm.
People like you. Let me read you a card. I asked friends, I asked the general public
mm-hmm.
to call Martha
mm-hmm.
and talk to the staff and ask her about their condition. You know, just to let people, let the staff know that Martha was not alone.
Yeah.
And here's a card. It says, "Hello, Martha. I'm sure sorry to learn you are experiencing the unjust agenda of, quote, these Orwellian times, unquote. Hopefully this will help to wake people up to the reality of what we are all facing. For this, I thank you and pray for you to get well in spite of the treatment you may be receiving so you can return home. If I can help with any nutritional info, just holler. Nutritional healing is my passion. Signed, Patricia."
Yep.
And, of course, they read these cards to Martha, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you know that one went all over the hospital?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it would. I'm sure it would. It's the only way to it. The people who are the most brainwashed are the ones who've gone through studies in universities. It never dawns on them that their minds are being molded to be an arm of this new world order of totalitarianism, where everything is scheduled and decided by experts. We have no say in anything. And of course, they've classified everyone. And well, look at the young ones. Look at them all in Ritalin, all the young guys.
Oh yeah.
And that's a new phenomenon, a sudden new normal. Any young fellow with leadership abilities is suddenly a problem and has his brain shrunk with
yeah.
Ritalin, and then they've started on the elderly. That's a standard procedure to decide, well, you're not really a productive citizen anymore, you have no rights, you're old, mm-hmm. and even start teaching them this in school, not to listen
yeah.
to anyone who's over 25 or even 30.
Yeah.
So,
well, Alan, I've seen this, and you may well have seen it too, but when my beard began to grow a little bit gray,
yeah.
Going out in public, I got all kinds of disdain from people, you know, from clerks.
Yeah.
If I went to a restaurant, they would seat me way back in the corner somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Worst spot in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do it automatically.
Yes.
And often when I would go up to the clerk at the checkout counter,
mm-hmm.
And I had, you know, I hadn't offended anybody so far as I could tell. I hadn't said anything or anything. Mm-hmm. And the clerk made it quite clear that she despised me on sight.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. This has been going on for some years that I began seeing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know it wasn't me alone because I had a friend who was, you know, she was in her 30s, like mid-30s or somewhere, but she was getting a touch of gray at the temples, and she decided to go back to nurse school and get her nursing degree.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? They seated her in the back of the class and gave her the lowest grades in the class.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And she figured out what was going on when she went and bought a bottle of dye, and she began working on the gray spots, and pretty soon she was the star of the class, grade A student.
That's right. That's right. Oh, yeah, it's been drummed into them since the 60s, don't trust anybody over 30.
Right.
And it's actually lower now. In fact, all the reality comes from television fiction. And there's so many programs on doctors or young doctors and all this kind of stuff.
Dr. Malone.
Yeah. And
young Dr. Kildare.
Mm-hmm. And lots more since is ongoing. Same with the cops. They're all, there's hardly a whisker on their face. They're just too young to be anything, of course. But it's to make the young identify with them and to disregard anyone who's a bit older with some wisdom.
Yeah.
That's why they decided back in the early 1900s the agenda would have to disrupt the family unit, especially the elderly, because it was the elderly that taught the grandchildren when the parents were working and very, very busy. Their history came from the elderly.
That's right.
And that was wisdom.
That was one of my problems, I suppose, Alan. It was during the Second World War, and my father was working at a plant, a munitions plant out in Kansas. And when the snow got higher, I had to walk a mile to the school, and I was in the first or second grade, somewhere in there. And when the snow got higher than my head, or my folks sent me back to Missouri to stay with my grandmother, and I could walk just across the corner to the school, and the snow was not nearly the problem.
Yeah.
So I learned at my grandmother's knee just a lot of things.
Yeah.
And so you're absolutely right, and that was one of the points, excellent points that you made on this Stettmiller show, I thought, and probably one that put them all in shock.
And yeah, a lot of them were in shock that I was even on that show, and it was a different type, because I don't cater towards the usual patriot movement, because I think that it's the blind leading the blind.
Oh, absolutely.
And you got to go much, much higher and look at the overall world situation, the world picture, and the ones that have been guiding this for a long, long, long time, to realize that, you know, this whole stand up and rebel is only, it will be mandated when it's the right time, because the big boys have planned for it for 40 years.
Alex Jones will make the announcement.
Yes, one of the big boys will definitely say it's time. And then the media can all point to the crazies, as they'll call them. They tried that after the Oklahoma City deal.
Mm-hmm,
every station on the planet suddenly showed these guys going through the forest, dressed in all odd parts of camo gear. And that was flashed all over the world immediately after Oklahoma City, because they wanted something to start then. And then they could point out and say, there's crazy people living amongst you. We've got to defend you and protect you. And that this is what they'll do at the right time. They've been preparing for 40, 50 years for what's coming down the road at the top.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not only that, you know, the young guys that are in the military have been brought up in a generation that generally never had a family, or if they did, it's one parent generally. And their family is either the local gang, or whoever takes them under their wing and indoctrinates them, and the military takes over from there.
Yeah.
So they're trained, and they've been brought up playing nothing but video games, where your object is to win at all costs. It doesn't matter how many you kill, and that's your military. And 90-odd% of them come back from the Middle East and go right into the police force.
Oh, yeah.
It's now called the Multi-Jurisdictional Task Force, where they combine them all with interchangeable roles. So this is how far it's gone.
Firemen, you know, that one guy was wearing blouse boots.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I'm sure he's just straight back from Iraq, kicking doors in and ordering people about.
And children. And
yeah.
Here he was looking for some others to kill.
Yes, I had a guy contact me who's just back from Iraq, who's he's got some health problems himself, as they all end up doing. But what they're doing is the old terrorist tactic over there towards the Iraqis, where they pick a different area or village every month or so, and bombard it and go in and just like a killing zone. They just kill everybody who moves, and they're trying to terrorize them into submission. So yeah, this is the real world. This is the real world. There's nothing nice about war.
Right.
And it doesn't matter how many movies they churn out. There's no good guys in the war, especially when the good guys should be back home in their own country. Yeah, that's the reality.
Down on the border there, shooting Mexicans.
That's what they'll... they go anywhere they're told and shoot whoever they're told.
But they're not going to do that. They're not going to go to the border.
No. No, it's...
We're going to get all of those illegals in here, and the more psychopaths, the better, so that we can start riots here.
Well, the U.S. funded all the psychopaths in Latin America. I mean, the Rockefeller Foundation and all the other big foundations have been funding money into the Latin American foundations to encourage this. And so while the little people at the bottom fight each other and argue in the streets, it's the big guys in the suits and ties in Washington, D.C. and New York that sit back and laugh. Because they planned it all a long, long time ago, you know. But what people don't understand is that everything that used to be the normal is under attack. And that's from the family. It's from what you thought was a culture. It didn't just develop, the culture has been gradually being purposely altered along a certain direction.
Right, and you really bum-fuzzled that first hour guy with that. You know that, don't you?
Well, I know. You see, the Patriot radio stations for years... And here's a thing people must understand. I am not my best pusher. I don't push myself good because I come out and speak the truth. And so I don't compromise. There's a huge business in the Patriot movement. It's a huge business, and it's been on the go since the 60s anyway, and it's been admitted here and declassified that the CIA started up.
Oh yeah.
The whole movement.
Well,
during the Cold War, you know.
Way back when, remember the John Birch Society?
Yeah.
Well, you know, old Robert Welch, he was, I don't know, he may have been a Mason.
Mm-hmm.
Some people allege he was, but he was certainly a government operative, in my opinion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was what the kickoff way back there.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And, I got in there and I bought every damn book they had in the... They did libraries, or bookstores, you know.
Yeah.
And I bought every book they had, Alan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I always say, when you're trying to get out the tunnel and see what's out in the big world, they've already prepared a whole bunch of misleading organizations to get you around in circles.
In one case, I was living up near Chicago when I first encountered the Birch Society.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gone over to the store on one occasion.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know. I don't recall, Alan, how I did it. But anyway, the store manager told me if I wanted to come in there on weekends, he'd come down and open the store for me. And I couldn't get in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was just buying a book now and then.
Yeah.
And so I did that. I went up there, and which is some miles my home, and when I got there, he was there. He opened the door for me.
Mm-hmm.
He sat down at the desk and was reading something, and he says, just help yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I was getting in there and taking armloads of books and putting them there, and I looked around And here were two guys with a camera taking pictures of us.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to say. They moved on out of sight. I said, "Did you see that?" He said, "Did I see what?"
Yeah.
See, those guys taking photos of us. They had a movie camera.
Yeah.
And he rushed to the door and peeked up, but he didn't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, there you go.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they admitted here, see, the Toronto Star did an article a few years ago, and how the CIA had started off a propaganda campaign against what was supposed to be against the communists at that time, and they were using Christian Front groups at that time to put over the anti-communist propaganda. And then, of course, it's now declassified in books that the whole culture industry, that meant the left-wing movements, the right-wing movements, were all run by the CIA since the 1950s. That's the real world we're living in. And meanwhile, as they keep trying to get America back, America's changed from yesterday to the day before to the day... It changes so fast.
Well, I was glad to see you make that point on RBN, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are you going back to, hey?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, you can't go back to something that wasn't yours. And,
yeah, I wasn't there to start with.
That's right. And of course, it's infantile, too. We always say that the good old days, well, that's when you're a child and you haven't realized what's going on.
Right.
And you're not paying bills. Your parents are doing the worrying.
Right.
That's the only good old days you have. And even that, for a lot of young people today, isn't so good.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's ongoing. But people, as Plato said, are the most adaptable species on the planet. And so they adapt to every new thing automatically without even questioning it, as long as everybody else is adapting to the same thing. And you can move them such a long way from one normal to the next new normal, to the next new normal. And here they are, you know, concentrating on the Mexicans coming in, while for about 10 years or 15 years they've been throwing up cameras all over the place to watch people.
Oh, yeah.
All over the United States, Canada, Britain, France, and so on. This is a big agenda, and they divert us with really what are really transient phases of the same agenda, but they don't want you to concentrate on the main part. Why have we adapted to being watched everywhere we go?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, Alan, years ago, let's say it was 10 years ago, I'm not sure, let's say 6 years ago, I noticed when we would drive into Springfield out where the big clover leaves are, and a big stop sign was, there was a camera on the pole, a light pole, and there was a camera there. And when we would pull up there, I'd stick my hand out and give them the finger.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the fools in the cars beside me thought I was fingering God, I suppose.
Uh huh. Yeah.
They never even looked up at the camera.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this was back before. Now then, they later. I mean, it was just up there unannounced to anybody.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And later, well, recently, they began bringing out what they called red light cameras.
Uh-huh.
Down at the red light, why, you've got cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And these are supposed to give you a speeding ticket.
Yeah.
You run the red light, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing, too, that they just happen to have built in microphones into the ones in the big cities that can pick you up having a conversation in a doorway 200 to 300 yards away.
Oh, yeah. And they told folks that that was to locate any shooting.
Yes, I know. Yeah. So that's the reality. We're in a complete movement, massive movement that's going on long before we were born, in fact. And just building up to where we're to go for the next part of the phase, which is total information network.
Yeah.
And they want to know everything that you're doing.
Yes.
All the time.
Well, I think that's what we detected here when I called the hospital.
Yeah.
And asked for the admission forms and the medical history forms, like 13 years of medical history I was going to have to write down, and I wanted to do it at home where I had some reference.
Yeah. Yeah.
and they replied, "Oh, we know all we need to know."
Yeah.
Let's settle that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, how could they know anything at all? She'd never been in this particular hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be the TIA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, of course, they asked for you to come in after you refused to go along with the little agenda.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think if I had gone in there without an armed bodyguard, maybe a platoon or so,
mm-hmm.
Why, I'd have been gone.
You'd have been assessed immediately, too, and then you'd be inside.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is happening all over. It's a standard procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they assess everyone. And then, of course, they just come in and take your property. You see, this is based on the Soviet structure, mm-hmm. the Soviet Union. And in the Soviet Union, even when the cops came in, they would confiscate someone's belongings and split the loot and pass it on upstairs too. Everybody got their cut. Now the hospitals since the 90s have been doing the same thing. Same in Canada. If the elderly get put in, they try to go after the next one who's left, get them out of there, put things up for sale, because now you're under their care and they need that money to take care of you. That's their excuse.
In this country, in the nursing homes, they call this spend down, S-P-E-N-D-D-O-W-N, spend down.
Mm-hmm.
And before you can get any Medicare, Medicaid, or any of that stuff,
mm-hmm.
you must exhaust your modest fortune, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, not even that. Here in Canada, and that came in the 90s with Bob Ray, they go after you regardless, and in fact they want you to sign over all your property to them, if possible. So they came out with the living wills, and everybody had to get a living will.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is, the same government encourages that because they have other lawyers working on that every year, changing it to make more loopholes so they can get in and still take your property.
Mm-hmm.
That's the law now, you see. So, in other words, it's not meant that you win here. It's not meant
right.
that you win. Everything, including us, we're one big business, one huge business. And that's how we're seen from the top. It's one huge human business. And you got it, they want it, they get it. Mm-hmm. And it's done through laws, you see. And now they're not even boring with laws, they'll say it's our policy.
Well, gee, Alan, I hope you're taping all this.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is a better interview than you would have gotten directly.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what's happening because, again, the elderly, and the United Nations now, the United Nations isn't just a bunch of people who sit there and say, we'd like to have world peace. It was set up to bring in, at least for one phase, a form of world government. And for every bureaucracy you have in any country, every level of bureaucracy, where it's to do with plumbing, electrical, housing standards, whatever, they have a comparative one at the United Nations. Not only an equal one, but it's the boss. And they are the ones that hand out these new upgrades to all the different countries on everything from health to, as I say, building codes, and is signed automatically into law. And it has been since World War II. So now they're only showing their teeth. There's no debates anywhere in any governments about this. The bureaucrats don't have to even go through any politicians. They're just there to keep us busy with their Punch and Judy shows. And they automatically sign them into law. Well, the United Nations declared a good citizen. Their definition of a good citizen is someone who is a producer and consumer. Once you're retired, you're no longer a good producer, you're just a consumer. Now, this is another way of phrasing it from Bertrand Russell's comment on getting rid of the useless eaters.
Yeah.
You see, it's all the same thing. And that's what the public fail to realize. We're all categorized according to our usefulness to serve the world state.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what the Council on Foreign Relations and the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which parent body, that's what they said in the 1900s they'd do. Everyone in the future would eventually, bit by bit, come to serve the world state. They would tolerate no excess or idleness And of course, their whole idea was to bring about a system of collectivism. That's what they called it. They studied all the systems, and of course they promoted the communist system. They funded it, in fact, from the West. And they said that collectivism was the easiest way to control and plan a future society, a society run by experts. And of course you'd have a massive bureaucracies to deal with that on the Soviet system. But it's the easiest way for a small fascist elite to take control at the top and run it all successfully. That's happened. It's here.
Yeah.
It's here.
And Alan, along that line, years ago, I got word that this kind of philosophy had been espoused by the National Educators Association.
Yeah.
I think that's their name, the Teachers Union.
That's right.
And I got the quote, page number, and so on, in their journal.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down to the library to have a look at it to confirm what I'd been learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it was on the restricted list. The National Educators Journal was not available to the general public.
Yeah.
It was only available to teachers and administrators and so on in the schools.
Yeah.
Well, at that time I was working in a factory, and the guy next to me on the next machine, his wife was a school teacher, and I asked him if she could borrow a copy. I wanted to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, and there it was. It said that the purpose was not to educate the child with facts and figures and that kind of thing. It was to make him a socially well-adjusted adult.
That came, in fact, that phrase from Eleanor Roosevelt.
Really?
Eleanor Roosevelt, when she did her tour of the Soviet Union, big hero in the Soviet Union. Amazing tour. He's the U.S. president's wife at the time going over there, and she said she had to visit. The first person on her list was her favorite person, Pavlov. Because Pavlov not only was, torturing dogs, he was using all his techniques on children. And what she said, when she compared the Soviet children to the American school children, she said, I don't see any playfulness on their way to school. They're not jostling each other, joking or shouting or laughing. She says, but my, they're so well behaved and orderly. And that's what she liked about it. And that is the Pavlovian system that's now in the U.S. because the National Education Association is only a part of the International Educational Association, which again goes back to UNESCO, which is the United Nations. Yeah, they'll take orders from the same base to create the same global society. And when the U.S. goes in to conquer another country, to free it from whatever it's supposed to be under, they always make sure the first thing they do is set up the schools. In comes UNESCO, like they did in Iraq, to train the first generation in so-called democracy and the way of living in democracy. That's what they've done as a standard procedure in every country they've gone into. Yeah.
Well, Alan, it was a few weeks later that the headline in the Chicago Sun-Times read, Teacher Knifed in Social Adjustment Class. So I take it that the application needed a little sharpening up there or something. I'll long remember that after having found that this is what they were trying to do to those kids, and some kids didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Dewey, you remember, was brought in, and I think he took over from Manley or Manning, and Dewey said, they said, we shall start to eradicate history that causes dissension amongst peoples. Because they already planned this whole phase of integration of the world, the multicultural system they'd have, it was already planned in the late 1800s, early 1900s. But John Dewey said that we'll eradicate the history that would cause any dissension and will actually create a basically ignorant class of young people who don't know any history and then can be molded along a new way. And that's happened, that the youngsters now have no education as such.
Oh, yeah, and no vocabulary, so no ability to read, so there's no way for them to get an education.
Yeah, like cool man, like...
Yeah. Like, you know, man, like, wow.
Yes, sir.
Gnarly,
totally,
man.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's it. It's called linguistic minimalism. Yeah. And George Orwell, of course, as you know, talked about the dictionary would get thinner every year. And it's happened. It's happened. It's all here. Yeah.
Yeah.
And George Orwell wasn't predicting with a crystal ball. He'd been chosen from Cambridge University to work for the elite. So he understood the agenda. He wasn't guessing this stuff. He knew it, and he came out and exposed it. So it's all happened. It's all happened. So the whole Patriot business can go on forever selling all their fear-based products. Because that's all they are fear-based. It's stuff they couldn't sell except for fear. It's going to do the public no good because they don't even know what's happened in the recent past, never mind the further back, or what's even happening now. They don't know.
Well, get your gold and silver here, Alan. You know.
Yeah.
The paper money's no good.
Well, it's amazing how Christians can take the same stuff, and they're very selective to do with their holy book, you know. When it comes down to they shall throw their gold and silver in the streets.
Yeah.
In other words, we're no use to them. They don't seem to believe that bit.
Right.
They prefer to take their chances on the material side rather than the spiritual. Yeah.
Well, I maintain that if I dared take a silver dollar down to Walmart and try to buy a package of gum with it, they would hit the big red button and the SWAT team would hit me.
Oh, I think so. I think
that
so.
Poor little clerk there has never seen a silver dollar, and she has never heard one mentioned, I should imagine.
Somebody gave me one once, and I went to the bank with it when I was dead broke. And they gave me a dollar for it, because it said on it, $1.
Yeah.
I got $1 for it. That's what I got, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And in a barter situation, that's all it is. It's a barter. So I don't care what you bought it for. In a depression, and you were at that loaf of bread, the guy with the loaf of bread will decide how much he's going to want from you.
That's right.
Yep. He might want the whole bag.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So that's the reality, and it's been confiscated before.
Mm-hmm.
Because Roosevelt confiscated the gold.
I've heard my grandparents talk about that. People were turning in their gold nib pens because the government said you got to give us all your gold.
To bail us out, yeah. And you know something, I seldom ever watch television because I know it's purely indoctrination. Even the fiction is propaganda. And there was a program on about the guys who'd found the Titanic with the sonar and the deep sea diving stuff. It was fascinating because we're following the routes that U.S. shipping took during World War II, and a lot of them were sunk off Greenland on the way to the Soviet Union, because the Soviet Union was a priority. They had to make sure Russia survived.
Yeah.
As a Soviet Union. It's an odd thing when it's your arch enemy, supposedly, that you're going to save. But however, they started to find what they found and what they knew they were looking for. And they spent a lot of money looking for these ships that had been sunk. And they went down with this very good equipment that you could see very clearly. These ships were carried laden with crates and crates of gold bars from the United States. On the way to the Soviet Union. And I thought, my God, this is just one ship, and I don't know how many, hundreds and hundreds of gold bars. And I remember the Soviet Union was not on the gold standard then. What did they need all this gold for? Well, they were shipping it from the U.S., from Fort Knox, that's why there's nothing in there. And they were moving it out somewhere else. And the guy said that, and he did recover a lot of it. And they said there's many more ships that they were sunk on the way to the Soviet Union that were carrying these gold bars. Fascinating stuff when you just think about things. Why would the people on the ruble who are not on any gold standard need gold during World War II? And because they didn't have to pay any country back in gold because everyone else was getting taken off it too. since Roosevelt took over. It's a fascinating thing that people just think that everything is a giant scheme in a giant con game. Yeah. Fascinating stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then, of course, the Rothschilds get up every morning and he sticks his finger out the window and decides what the value of gold will be that day on the exchange.
Right.
As a commodity.
They fix the price.
It was a good guess.
That's, that's the gold fix, they call it.
Yeah.
And isn't that an obvious term?
Exactly. Well, so is the market. Mm-hmm. See, the market is for animals. That's where you took animals. Mm-hmm. And so you have the exchange market and you have the business market. And all the rest of it, that's where animals go. And that's why, in all this fake economic system, you have a bull market and you have a bear market. You see, these are all astronomical terms they're using because they used to, all these guys studied the old stars, etc. So you have the bear, which is Arcturus, and that's the great bear. And then you have all the other ones, the bull, the Taurus market. It's a big con game. Big con game. And just like the zodiac swirls around every year, you're watching the market do the same. It swirls around. It's all fixed. Yeah. Yeah. But in a giant casino where they put your pensions and everything and tell you it's quite safe.
Oh, yeah.
Let's all gamble.
Mm-hmm.
That's all gamble, yeah.
And the wheel is fixed. I mean, and it's not fixed as favorably as those in Las Vegas.
That's.
You know, they have to let the customer win in Las Vegas once in a while, keep them coming back. But I'm not sure they have to do that in the stock market.
Well, it's funny too. You know, when I can remember in Britain that the casinos started to sprout up too, but they were all authorized by the government. And then they started to sprout out across Canada, again authorized by the government, who said they'd pay off the national debt with them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's funny, everything's gone up, taxes go up, we're still broke, supposedly, and these things are bringing in millions and millions every month.
Yeah.
But we're not told where it goes.
Well, here we were told that this is going to pay for the schools. Your kids are going to have plush schools.
Mm-hmm.
Due to this. Well, they funneled it in to the schools at the top,
mm-hmm.
but down at the bottom they were funneling it out.
Yes, I know.
So that, mm-hmm. net result for the schools was zero.
Yeah. Everything is a racket. And the big mafia run the system. Yeah. The real mafia. Not the guys in Chicago.
Right.
But the real boys, I get people in government, in bureaucracies, phoning me and telling me stories all the time, and it's just amazing where the money goes. It's in pockets, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All the time. So the psychopaths get into power, they lust for power, they want to get into the biggest jackpot there is, and that's the taxpayer's honeypot.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get those claws into their honeypot, because there's no questions asked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you just, you cough up whatever they demand, and who knows what they do with it.
Yeah, we'll never know. I do know the rackets that go on.
Locally, we've had a little bit of a scandal with city government. It turns out that the municipal court was missing $1.6 million.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor was recently on a local radio show, and somebody asked him about that, and he says, well, you know, on a $7.6 million budget, $1.6 really doesn't amount to
that amount. Yeah, mm-hmm. They probably fill out their pockets into seats or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe the cleaners swept them up.
They haven't found where that money went.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not looking for the losses anymore.
Oh, no. What they'll tell you is the cost of investigation would outweigh the loss. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, of course, each individual under this world order must be more responsible than they've ever been before and accountable for every penny that you get in. Yeah. So something, as Orwell said it perfectly, he said some are more equal than others in such utopias.
Yeah.
Isn't that true, eh?
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And how is Martha settling in?
Well, she's doing really good, and there's really something I should tell you that is really strange going on.
Mm-hmm.
I had these reports from her that from the hospital that they had given her a swallow test,
mm-hmm.
that she had flunked the swallow test,
mm-hmm.
and I got all these reams of instructions on how what to do about her diet,
mm-hmm.
like she could not swallow thin liquids such as water,
mm-hmm.
and so I was to put thickening in her water.
Mm-hmm.
And no straws were to be used. We had a little sip cup that had a couple of tiny little holes in the lid, and she was supposed to sip a little bit through that, and she didn't like the thing at all. And
mm-hmm.
she landed a straw.
Yeah.
So I gave her a straw, and hey, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
No problem.
Yeah.
And it went on, Alan, and, instead of doing blending her foods, I started off immediately doing that because that's what they told me it was required.
Mm-hmm.
And Martha kept demanding real food. Okay, well, take it slow and let's see what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? She was eating boiled eggs. On diced fresh tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
and demanding some toast to go with it.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Know, so the whole thing was,
mm-hmm.
you know, what were they doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe that she was unable to swallow her aluminum oxide in the hospital that they were feeding her. That could have something to do with
it. Maybe that was it. She wouldn't swallow the toothpaste.
Mm-hmm. Did they give her any sedatives in the hospital?
I don't know. I have requested her medical records, and I haven't received them yet. I've also requested a friend of mine to send them to her.
Yeah, because that can also affect your swallow reflex, you know.
Right. But, the thing of it is when she comes home,
mm-hmm.
she's eating like a horse.
Yeah, yeah. If whatever she was on is wearing off, I'm sure. And, of course, they'd have her on one of these liquid diets, preparing her for the hospice.
Right.
Yeah, in the hospice, you see, you get put on Halidol, stuck in a chair that you can't get out of, and you just sit there and you drool, because the Halidol causes a side effect. You actually drool. You can't swallow your own sputum. So yeah, they're getting her ready for the exit farm, I call them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the hospice. I've had doctors in the States tell me that. Yeah.
They were all set to do that. That had been a plan from the beginning, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work out. And principally, the reason it didn't work out was that the furthest one out was New Zealand.
Yeah, I know so many people there, yeah.
Yeah, and they... So I think that it finally dawned on them that there was easier meat somehow.
Yes, all the time.
Up, they would mm-hmm. get further exposure.
Yeah, why stick with one when they've got dozens every day to pick from? Yeah.
Right.
Because this is happening all over the place. This is what people have got to understand. When each one of us, we'll all be there one day. We're all going to be there one day.
They're moving the thing back. You know, they've been going after the weak. Women, children,
mm-hmm.
The disabled and the elderly, but they've gone fat and strong on that diet, and now they're going after the strong and healthy.
Yeah, and the problem is now, the people, as you say, since Dr. Kildare and all the rest of it, and Ben Casey and all these different, and then even in Britain years ago, they had Emergency Ward 10, a drama, and then of course I've had dozens and dozens of drama series since, to indoctrinate the public into this is the way it is. And so you don't question authority, you just go along with them, yeah. Yeah, you're not an expert, so, you know, once they decide you need something, you better obey, because you have no qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's what they've brainwashed the public with, through fiction, through absolute fiction. And you know, there's authors in the 1950s who worked at the United Nations who said they would do this via television. They would use it to disseminate propaganda via fiction to train the public. And it's happened.
Yes, and they've done a bang-up job of it, which you get in a conversation with someone who watches TV. You're going to find out that they totally reject any reality.
They do,
You know, I was talking with a friend, and he brought the topic up about these supposed Arab terrorists from Venezuela or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Santo Domingo, I don't know, but they were about to launch an attack on Fort Dix, New Jersey.
Yeah,
was this the most ridiculous thing you ever heard?
Yeah.
And I told him that, and he said, well, he says that, you know, all those soldiers out there at Fort Dix, they don't have any guns, they don't have any ammunition for the guns. I said, all of those soldiers...
Budget cuts, eh?
You know, I said, all of those soldiers, what you say is true about all of the soldiers, the ones that are going to class or whatever, they are issued guns and ammunition. They kept that stuff down at the armory, and when they want all of those people to have guns, they just go down to the armory and they get the guns and ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with the guards.
Yeah.
I said, the guards on the gate and patrolling the streets of the fort are military police, and you better believe that they are armed and that they have ammunition in those weapons.
Yeah.
So the ordinary military policeman carries a pistol, and it's loaded, and he has extra clips for it.
Yeah.
And in the back of his the post, or the back of his Jeep, he's patrolling, and he has a sawed-off shotgun.
Yeah.
And it's loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and you tell me that those idiots think that they're going to go up to the guard post and start shooting?
Yeah.
And he said, well, you know, they were going to buy some guns. I said, what are these guys going to do with guns?
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't have guns of their own, they were buying guns from a government agent, right?
Yeah.
Now, why didn't they have guns of their own? You know, they couldn't. They most likely didn't have guns of their own because they probably didn't know how to use one.
Well, the fact is, and we know this from past experience, that you see, all the big groups that we're hearing today, Al-Qaeda, etc., which is a CIA term, they started up these groups during the Cold War, again, supposedly to fight the Soviet system, supposedly. And back in the 70s, it's actually counting the newspaper from the top think tanks in Britain that when the Cold War was over, there'd be a problem with all these groups that the CIA and MI6 had set up. Because there would be armed groups, etc., who are militant, who are very nationalistic, because they were encouraged to be nationalistic to fight for their countries against the Soviets. So the CIA, once again, never left them. They have their contacts at the tops of a lot of these groups. And they're all working hand in glove to bring about the chaos, you see. It's the people down at the bottom who do the dirty work, who get caught, who have no idea that they're being fooled. And that's why I tell all young people of all ethnic persuasions, don't join a group, because you'll find the guy at the top that's getting you all stirred up is probably working for the CIA.
Right.
Because they've admitted they ran the left-wing groups, the communist groups. That's declassified now. Mm-hmm. They ran the communist groups in the United States. Yeah. And Arthur Schlesinger... all the big famous faces that you see on television, these were all members of first the OSS and then the CIA. That's declassified now. Yeah. It's amazing that this is I call it a matrix because there's many levels to it.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, the massive funding went into the creation of a culture creation They had a department in the United States run by the CIA. It was them that funded all the rock, the drug, sex, etc. movements that's now officially declared. They ran all the ultra-feminist ones. We know that the woman who had that magazine and Gloria Steinem, she was employed and paid and funded, and they even started up her news magazine for her to bring out the woman as goddess type deal to further separate the family. I mean, this is all from your own CIA. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you really made some excellent points when you were talking there on RBN about the destruction of the family, about how it started in the 20s and kind of got derailed there by the facts of life, mm-hmm. and then later they have brought it back again much more successfully.
Yeah. Yeah, at that time they'd worked full tilt towards a pill, the contraception pill, and they'd worked full tilt towards developing better drugs to dish out. And so they tested those drugs too on military personnel before even the teenagers were given them. So this was a strategy to, they were looking down 100 years down the road, 200 years down the road even, as to the kind of world that they were going to create from the top. And they had to destroy all that was to make room for that which is new. That's the term that they used. And if they could destroy the family unit, they would destroy the continuity of oral histories and mm-hmm. personal histories. And then when there's no one there to stand up for anyone, the government can dictate right to you, just like again in George Orwell's 1984. The big screen was in your home, and that woman up there that was telling you to keep fit and all this stuff could speak directly to you. There was no one there to help you.
That's right. Do those physical jerks.
That's right. And so what you had was literally one-to-one government right to you. No family mm-hmm. to stand up and say, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted. Yeah.
Well, yes, and it's really evident to me when you speak of this, and I remember the family get-togethers when I was a kid, and my uncles would come in, and my aunts, and so on, and mm-hmm. There was no TV, there was a radio, but you didn't turn that on until 6 o'clock. There wasn't anything on worthwhile, and you might turn it on and listen to some Amos and Andy or something.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what people did was sit around and talk and exchange stories about what they had seen and done and seen done.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a totally different thing. Today, mm-hmm. if you could get a family together, what would they do? They don't know anything. They don't see anything. They make no observations.
They don't communicate.
No, they wouldn't tell you if they knew or couldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm. They can't communicate, you know.
Yeah.
They don't know how to speak to people because they've grown up with that television hypnotizing them, and when that's on, no one talks, everyone stares.
Right.
It's hypnotic. And it was intentionally developed to literally destroy communication between peoples. Even in Britain, they used the place where people went, local people would go, was a local bar. There's always a local pub somewhere.
Yeah.
Everybody came in there and they'd discuss everything, all politics, all personal things that were happening to them by governments, etc. And that's all you heard was men talking, yap, 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 you know.
Yeah.
And you learned a lot, you heard a lot being discussed, things you didn't know about. And then in all over the country at the same time, in came a TV and sports in the bar.
Yeah, in the bar.
And if it wasn't that, it was the music blaring until you couldn't talk anymore. But that was also directed from the top mm-hmm. and mandated because most of the big bars were chains in Britain. They were long chains, so they could implement that at the top. And it just stopped all conversation.
Well, one of the interesting events that I recall was in Boston, there was a place in the central city called Bughouse Square.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, anybody could take a soapbox and go down there and stand up it and try to stand up it on it and express their opinions about anything and try to draw a crowd and try to persuade the crowd to their particular argument. And you could go down there on Friday or Saturday afternoons and early in the evenings. And there might be 30 or 40 guys out there spouting whatever they wanted to spout. And I haven't heard that mentioned since those days. I would bet they put a quietus on that.
Yeah, they would. Yeah, that's similar to Hyde Park in London, with the soapboxes. And you'll get people like tramps going up and saying the most amazing stuff. However, there was a book called Straight and Crooked Thinking came out about the 1930s, I think, 40s. And this fellow had discussed the fact that the public had been conditioned, even then, not to listen to a person dressed in rags, even though they could be telling you the most profound and true things. But you get the same person, you dress him up with coat and tails and put him in the London Palladium and advertise him as being some kind of master professor. And they'll come up by the thousands and pay money to hear him, and then they'll go home and they'll quote him forever. Okay. And all he's doing is saying the same things. He's saying the same things. But that's perception and judgment, or judgment interferes with that which we can learn. So this is, again, the standard technique of creating a world where the public are trained only to listen to experts. And by that method, you can make them believe anything.
Oh, yeah.
Anything.
Yeah, all you got to do is pay the expert.
Yeah. And that's happened. That's happened. You know, if you're not an expert, you'll be dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I encountered that back when I was doing a little political organizing myself and was invited around to the university to do a little talk. And, and when I met a hostile professor, and you know I met a bunch of hostile professors. Their students invited me to their class on political science or whatever it was, and the hostile professor's first question is, what do you do for a living? And I said, well, I repair machinery. Well, that just sunk me, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
I was, I should have lied to him.
Persona non grata.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you were just, you're nobody.
You can just dismiss anything that you have to say.
Yeah. Why are you talking? You're just, you're a plumber. I thought Jesus was a carpenter, you know.
Well, they say that.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was some kind of a Pharisee slur.
It could be a Pharisee slur or an old Masonic reference to a builder. Yeah, because the Hebrew term actually could mean builder too. But it's fascinating how they can create altered perceptions. And here we have this happened now too with war. And this is why still they'll keep showing you Hitler with a uniform on, and Mussolini with a uniform on, and Stalin with a uniform on. And of course, the whole idea is that's what a tyrant is.
Yeah.
You see? And so here you have guys in business suits, because business is good, and business suits are good, who are doing exactly the same thing, saying the same things, but again, perception is distorted because we've been trained to only believe that guys in uniforms are tyrants. Yeah? It's all psychology. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, Alan.
So when did Martha actually come back? What date did you bring her back?
She came back last Friday.
What, was it sudden, or did they give you much warning?
They called me up and were trying to pressure me to go to send her to a nursing home. I was still there. They persisted right up to the end with that stuff.
Really?
And I said, did you ask Martha about this? And she said, and the guy says, yes. And I had a couple of phone calls about it. And eventually I got a call from this Dr. Evans. And he was saying, "Well, yeah, we asked her about it." And she, and I says, "Well, what did she tell you?" And he says, "Well, she doesn't want to go."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Did she also tell you that she worked for 11 years in a nursing home?" Mm-hmm. "Well, yeah."
"Yeah."
"Yeah, she did tell us that."
Mm-hmm.
And I says, "We might have to ask you what you want to do." And I says, "Well, I'm with Martha."
Yeah, yeah.
And it had reached the point that that I think they wanted to get her out of there simply because they were getting too much attention.
Uh-huh.
I had friends calling up wanting to interview this Dr. Evans and him refusing the call, mm-hmm. and I had friends calling up and wanting to interview this one and that one, people who had been advocating Martha's being sent to the nursing home against her will.
Yeah.
And I think they were filling with hate. So this guy says, "Well, we're about ready to release her."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Well," and that was on Wednesday, and I said, I didn't know they were going to do that. It took me by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, "Well, can you send her home on Friday? This will give me the following day, Thursday, to get home health nurses in here to help her."
Yeah.
And he said, "Yeah, we can do that." So she came home on Thursday around 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And we have had people coming in to see about Martha. The first one arrived here this afternoon.
Your health workers, yeah.
Yes, yeah, she was. We've had a nurse here. A nurse was here yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and we had a nurse's assistant here today, and she was top notch.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned a lot about how to put a sheet under a patient, you know.
Yeah.
Here in just a matter of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really pleased with the people that we have that are coming in to help.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And I'm sure Martha's happy too.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's so glad to be home.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was really running a lot of anxiety because they kept pressuring her to go to this nursing home.
Yeah.
And they were treating her, or one of the things she didn't like, they were treating her like a child.
Yeah, that's
Martha
it.
Was enraged mm-hmm. when they, she told me, and these people were gathered around her and were trying to make her say something she didn't want to say.
Yeah.
And she said, "And do you know they asked me what day we got married?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "And all the time they had it there on a piece of paper."
Yeah.
And she was just infuriated with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah.
They were playing all kinds of little games mm-hmm. like, along that line.
Yeah.
Trying to break down her resistance.
Resistance, yeah.
Going off to the nursing home. Of course, that wasn't going to work with Martha.
No, she's strong enough to understand the whole thing.
Yeah, she was in survival mode.
Well, you can imagine how many actually succumb, though, eh?
Oh, yeah. You know, because these are the experts, and they're telling
yes.
you that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and they have no experience with nursing homes, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they don't know, and they've been told it's a wonderful place.
Mm-hmm.
Sunset
Boulevard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Well, I'm glad it's worked out. I'm glad it's worked out because it's the small victories that people should always remember. It's happening to people everywhere, every day.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it is happening every day to everyone out there, and mm-hmm. the people need to know that, Alan.
Yeah.
This was not some setup for Martha alone.
And I know. It's standard practice
it's
now.
It's business for them.
Yes, it is. It's a standard practice, and again, as an old man would say, he says, "As I am now, so you will be," you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it will come around to everyone, this,
mm-hmm.
And suddenly you'll find it's not like television dramas at all.
Right, and since the Terry Schindler-Shivo case, It can happen to anyone of any age.
That's right.
I think she was in her 30s, but that decision, that established, her order of execution established that the lowest judge on the totem pole, the probate judge, can determine that anyone is dragged before him is incompetent and toss him into a nursing home never to get out.
That's right.
And once in a nursing home, then age isn't a matter either.
And as this anti-terrorism bill marches and unfolds, because it's meant to unfold, you see, and spread to encompass just about anything, your opinions, your inflexibility of opinions, a term they've taken from the Soviet Union, that was enough to get you locked up in a psychiatric hospital in the Soviet Union. Well, my goodness, you're going to see it all come down now, because they want everyone to have psychological evaluations on a routine basis.
That was Bush's new freedom that he announced.
Well, here's the key here. See, these guys tell the truth in a lawyer-type fashion. It was like the New Deal. You see, what Roosevelt was talking about was a new constitution. People don't understand that. The new freedom means, if it's a new freedom, that means there must be a new definition of freedom. And there is. There is. There is a completely new definition.
The definition was, in that particular announcement, that every citizen in the United States would be examined for psychological problems and treated.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was to start off in the schools, and they're busily going about it.
I saw some of the training manuals that a teacher brought home from university on what to look for in children, mainly boys. And just glancing through it and all the different symptoms for either hyperactivity, attention deficit, whatever they claimed it was going to be, I thought, none of us, none of them in my classes back in years gone by, none of us would have passed them. We'd all have been on Ritalin.
Oh, yeah.
I realized that. Yeah. And I told her that, too. And she knows, she says, I know. I know, sister, you know, you're a prostitute, you know. You're a prostitute, not any convictions for money.
Yeah.
And she knew it, too. And that's a sad business that we're living.
Oh, yeah. That they have people that will do these things to children.
Yeah. And because it's mainly, again, it's single-parent mothers and families.
Oh, yeah.
And the mothers, because I've talked to people who worked in pharmacies, who feel like shaking them coming in, these mothers coming in to get the drugs to put little Tommy on. That's going to destroy his brain because they listen to the experts. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks for coming on, Butch. And I'll get this.
Well, thank you for having me, Alan. And if I may, I would ask any of your listeners to contact me if they have seen these fake firemen in operation, these jack-booted thugs dressed in black who pretend to be firemen and are not.
And who have pistols on their hips.
That's right.
Yeah.
Pistols on their hips.
Maybe they're water pistols. I never thought of that.
Water pistols. Hey, haven't they been forbidden?
No, probably.
Well, for kids, I think. Anyway.
Yeah, if they look too much like the real thing, I guess, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they're made out of little orange plastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's likely to frighten somebody.
I'm sure, yeah.
But yeah, my website is vetzine, vetzine.blogspot.com, and my email is theseorwellian times@fastmail.fm. And if you've seen these guys in action, or you know somebody that has, well, feel free to contact me. I'd like to know just how extensive this is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on, and I'll talk to you again, Butch.
Thank you, Alan, and have a good evening.
Will do.
So there you have it, folks. Thanks to all the listeners who called from Europe and Australia, New Zealand, the US and Canada, to the hospital where Martha was being held. And thanks for all those who wrote letters and sent postcards, which were read by the staff to Martha. And it turned out some of them even were passed around right through the hospital, because the information on it, the indignancy of what was happening, started to penetrate the conditioning of the hospital staff, especially the nursing staff. This is how you change people. Slow process, but bit by bit, you can get through, you can break the spell of their educated indoctrinations. From Hamish and myself, it's good night. I mean, your God or your gods go with you.
Como la mo- Hace un recuerdo.